Well, this morning you have one page, so I can't mix up which order they're in. Makes it very easy. The other is that today what we're going to do is look at an element called the imagery in Proverbs, and I think there's some applicable components of it for us today in connection with our grandkids or our children. So that's kind of what we're going to discuss and talk about and kind of look at that. But I can't help, anyway, these images will make sense here in a little while. So I appreciate the lead-in as you talked about the pig with the ring in its nose and all of that. But if you've been reading the paper later or watching the news, one of the components that we find that we've seen recently, and I just can't pass up the opportunity today, it is just very interesting, and that is foolish people proclaim folly. That's a proverb. Foolish people proclaim folly. Now, if we took at Proverbs, we look at it, what is the primary step that an individual becomes a fool? The very first thing they do to be identified as a fool is that they declare there is no God. Okay? That's the first thing. A fool says there is no God. So that's why I feel that I can end up looking at San Francisco and saying something is foolish that they're doing. Because San Francisco and all this, they claim there is no God. So if you were not aware this week, they decided to change the wording in the legal system to not have it so detrimental to criminals. Okay? So now they propose the following references. A convicted felon will no longer be called a convicted felon. They will be called a justice-involved person. Okay? The other thing is a released prisoner. It's too detrimental to be called a released prisoner. They are now going to be called a formerly incarcerated person or a returning resident because their self-esteem is really important and we need to make sure. We don't need to call the crime a crime and really point that direction. We need to lighten it up so that they won't have this scarlet. By the way, that's the phraseology from the drafters of this. They believe being a felon, you can get a scarlet letter on you and it affects you for the rest of your life. Well, of course it affects you the rest of your life. My goodness. A drug addict. No longer called a drug addict, but a person with a history of substance abuse. Gonna make that a little easier. And then my favorite, a juvenile delinquent, young person with justice system involvement. Okay? So, and the final one, parolees. They're just person under supervision.
And what's the outcome of all this? If you say these old words out loud in San Francisco, will you be incarcerated?
You could be, I guess. I don't know. You know, it could be.
No. You just become a justice-involved person.
Yes, you would become a justice.
but that definition, justice-involved person, is the same definition that they use for a victim of a felon.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point on both the victim.
Felony is also a justice-involved person.
So you create both
of them. For both people.
Both people.
Boy, does that make things.
Yeah. So anyway, if you're not aware, you should be aware and recognize the world that you live in is fallen, and there are numerous fools, and you should expect folly. You should expect it. That's the natural course of a fool. Is they will act foolishly. They will be involved in their folly. Okay? All right. So now we want to get on to today's lesson. I couldn't bypass that. That was just one of those interesting things this week. I couldn't pass up on not making that correlation between Proverbs. Introductory comments for you today basically are the use of imagery. And what we want to do is look at Solomon, who uses animals, bodies, weather, all these elements to try to help us understand in more depth the principle of a proverb, of wisdom. Because imagery, basically, what it does is it creates for you a mental picture that attaches it to an idea. That's what imagery does. An author does that. When an author writes, he wants you to connect to his story. So if he can draw imagery that will get you to draft a picture and bring out your emotions or whatever and connect with it, you'll connect with his writing. So the same concept here, and that's one of, Bev was talking this morning in the car, the Hebrew poetry does this a lot. Hebrew poetry and the Psalms, they make these images and these connections to draw you into it and make that. It connects what we read to a deeper understanding by awakening our senses. In other words, I can say a word or I can tell you something and you can understand it, but if I can create an image that draws from your experience, that draws your emotionals to it, I can make a better connection. I can get it deeper. And then it calls our feelings and emotions to the surface to reinforce that connection. So the more I can draw you experientially into it through the image I provide, the more connection you're going to make. My mom passed away it was years and years ago, but I remember in a service we were sitting in the service, and a scent or an aroma, whether it was perfume or something, I was able to get a whiff of that aroma, and it immediately, I almost felt as if my mother was there, you know? Just that senses that draw that back and bring that to the forefront of my mind, and that's what Solomon is doing. So Solomon's use of imagery, what we see, is he connects a principle to an observed common image. In other words, he is writing his Proverbs, and those that are reading them, when he makes a comment about the weather or about a pig or about a dog, they immediately, from the culture they're in, go, oh, I know what you're talking about. I recognize that. He amplifies and clarifies an idea with a mental picture. He'll use imagery that will cause a disgust to well up inside you. The emotion is going to be disgust. And he connects that, you're disgusted with it, he connects that to a principle that he wants us to hang on to. He reinforces the idea that wisdom can be learned by being a student of life. And that's one thing you ought to hang on to. You remember he early on talks about wisdom is present. It's screaming at us. And he's not talking about the words. He's talking about the world and the culture they live in. If you are a student of the world that you live in, your environment, it consistently can portray to you images that will reinforce the principles of wise living. Just by watching the world, whether that's in nature or the nature of us as humans, how we act, or just in the common things that occur around us, we can see those connections to those principles. Just in Proverbs alone, and by the way, oftentimes an image is done through what's called a simile, the word like. Something is like, and it creates this picture. Just in Proverbs alone, the word like is used 136 times. So that would tell you that he is attempting to have that connection with something to reinforce what he's teaching. Now, if I were to tell you, and I'm going to give you the power of imagery here. If I were to tell you that this last week I was happy as a child eating chocolate cake, okay? Now, you got an image, you kind of think, but if I can create a picture of a child eating chocolate cake, that gives you even more understanding. This is my grandson at a birthday when they gave him chocolate cake, and boy, did he enjoy it. He not only enjoyed eating it, he enjoyed wearing it, okay? But you look at the face of that child, there is true joy there, true joy. And so if I give you that, if I say to you that cell phones are kind of overtaking our understanding of reading, If I just say that to you, you kind of go, I understand that. But if I give you an image, okay, a cell phone holding a gun on a book who's digging its own grave, okay, it gives you a better, it just draws a picture and it allows you to see that. If I were to give you a statement of the fact that generations change, technology changes, and it affects the way we live. If I tell you that, and then I show you a picture like this, okay? 1990, the tube is big, the man is small. 2012, the tube is thinner, the man is big. Shows you the transition and change, okay? So, what I've given to you there is just samples of how imagery can drive a point home, connect with it, help us to understand it even better. Sometime in humor, sometime in sadness, whatever. And so what we're going to do for the next 20 minutes or so is we're just going to look, and I didn't give it to you in handouts because I want to give you the image first. And I want you to pull that image, and if you had it in your handout, you'd already be doing that. So I just want you to pull the image and think about it, and then we're going to connect it to the proverb, okay? So the first one I want to bring up to you, spring rain. Okay? What comes to your mind when you hear spring rain? I can tell you right now, looking at all of you, when I said spring rain, you all smiled. Yeah. Every one of you did. Yeah. So it's drawing something, an emotion, a connection. What comes to your mind when you hear spring rain?
Freshness.
Freshness. Coolness.
Life. Flowers are blooming.
Flowers blooming.
Tornado.
Okay? The tornado alert.
That's
every day in Texas. If you're a farmer, what does spring rain mean for you?
Plenty.
Yes. Crops, supply, gives you things. Okay? So when Solomon uses this to connect it to something, he's wanting that imagery to connect to the principle. Now in this one, he basically says, in the light of the king's face there is life. And his favor is like the clouds of the spring rain. He wants to realize in the connection that he has that this connection you have with the king, if he looks upon you with favor, you welcome it like a spring rain. We can connect some of the secondary principles of spring rain to that principle. And in his day, when the king looked on you with favor, it was good. What happened to you if the king did not look on you with favor? It was not good. You didn't get what you needed. You could often be killed, being at odds with the king. And so he is telling us in this principle that in this case, he wants that image of a spring rain to connect with when you're in good relationship with your king. That's what it's like. Okay?
You know, Rabbi, get an example for that spring. Philippines or any countries who plant rice, rainy season, planting season is November. This is raining. And in springtime, you could see the harvest time.
And you look forward to it. Are we all not this summer looking forward to the spring rain?
You also are any random spring.
Yeah.
You're thinking of it in terms of the growth. If that was summer rain for a farmer, cotton farmer, whatever, you're thinking it's going to wipe out my crop.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Yep.
So the timing.
Yes. And in Solomon, he uses rain in several different venues, both positive and negative, to draw the attention to a connection of that principle. In this case, he's using that welcome spring rain that we look forward to and we enjoy. Now, this next one, you have to just endure with me, okay? Because it's not a pleasant one, because it does want to draw something out of you. Okay. A dog and his vomit. Okay? All of you did not smile when I made that comment. All right? But we can recognize when a dog eats something it shouldn't eat, and sometimes it eats grass because something's not right, it ends up releasing that from its stomach.
Yes, that's true.
But we also, if you've had a dog, you recognize that oftentimes a dog will return to that. Okay? Now, I'm not going to try to create too big of an image here. And by the way, this was done for kindness. I gave you a puppy instead of a dog and vomit because I felt like that would be a more acceptable image. Okay? So I did that for the faint-hearted in the room, okay? But here he wants, we look at that about the real life situation that we observe, and evidently they observed the same thing back in his day of a dog returning to his vomit. And he says, like a dog that returns to his vomit, so a fool repeats his folly, okay? So it's a disgusting imagery. And the key component is this. A dog does not remember that eating something made it sick. And it returns to it. It's like its memory of sin is limited. He does not remember the negative elements of his sin, so he keeps returning to it. He doesn't learn. Excuse me.
It's kind of like what you have said a number of times. You don't find in sin
what you enter sin to find. Yeah. So he gives this image the example that a dog has is it does not connect its actions with its consequences. And it keeps repeating the same action. And it keeps getting the same consequence.
Like saying you eat your words? Same
maybe a little bit. I think he wanted us to be a little more disgusted, so he chose, instead of eating our own words, he chose a picture that would go, oh, yeah, don't want that. Okay? All right, here's another, the next one. A pig and a gold ring. There you go, lipstick on a pig. That might be similar, you know. I think that is a modern day similar translation to it, okay? But we think of a pig. What does a pig eat? Anything. Doesn't matter what it is. Where does a pig live? Loves mud. Loves mud. My brother worked on a pig farm for years, and I remember every time we went down to visit him, whew, and he would go out in the field and in the pens, and he would work with them. And when he would come home, he would have to take his clothes off outside because the stench of the pen would permeate his clothing, and so he didn't want to bring it into the house.
Yeah. Okay. I'm from Iowa. We have a lot of hog farms. And what we call country fresh air, and you can literally smell it 2 to 3 miles away from
a natural hog farm. You can smell it. And you call it country fresh air? That is lipstick on a pig big time, okay? There you go. All right? So here he gives us this imagery of a pig and a gold ring. Now look at how we have that imagery. Now he says, like a gold ring and a pig's snout is a beautiful woman who rejects discretion. Now discretion here can mean physical taste. It can mean intellectual discretion, or it can mean ethical judgment. The idea, I'm having trouble today, I apologize, something's right there, it won't go away. If you take the ring away, you have a pig, kind of an animal that's not very clean. If you take the ring by itself, it's beautiful, it's desired. So you're taking something that is desired and precious and putting it on something that is anything but. Okay? You're going to try to come to my aid, see if I can get rid of that. Water. Let's see if it'll work. Well, that's good. I was wondering if it was the one you were drinking out of. Thank you. So what is the image? Lipstick on a gold pig. What principle is he trying to drive at? A beautiful woman would be considered the gold ring. The pig is the lack of discretion. We can really find the principle he's driving at here. Outward beauty without inward character. That's what he's driving at. Lipstick on a pig. Trying to dress something up that is of no value and make it look pretty. Now, the other thing is, we can also draw from this that his understanding of beauty is not what's on the outside. But it has to do with the moral character of the individual. Our culture has a hard time with that, does it not? What we see on the outside often becomes the very thing we hold in high esteem, and what we truly see as the character we often ignore or diminish.
You notice that everybody now is a good person.
Yes.
No matter what they just did.
Yeah. They're just... what would we call that? Character challenged?
Mistake.
They're just character challenged, morally challenged, just, you know. And we even act, and we won't go into it, but we even try to take the point and say that the way they are can't be helped. We try to say it was from their birth or from their makeup. They're just that way. That's just who they are. So don't judge them, which just becomes an excuse to do whatever I want to do in my flesh. But the idea here, and we see it, I mean, I remember back when, and I'm not going to go into great detail, but I remember when Kobe Bryant was accused of sexual assault, and his, what you might call his celebrity status, seemed to overshadow the character. It was like, because of his celebrity status, we're not going to hold you accountable to this character flaw. O.J. Simpson, same thing. We can list several off. Go ahead.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
Their personal lives are a mess, but on the movie screen, they look like the
$1 jillion.
$1 jillion. And it doesn't become who you are. It becomes what you look like or what you can do. And we're going to ignore the character if we see something we like or we enjoy what we get. Okay? And that's the principle of what he's driving at. You want to add to that?
But the problem is who you focus on out of that group. It's not that all the groups in Hollywood is bad, but you look at James Garner, you look at Paul Newman, what those guys did with their lives, they were married to the same woman, they were married to 50 years.
Yeah.
It's who the individual is.
Right.
And too often the focus is over on the one that's the latest bachelorette.
Yep. And we do recognize from the text, and it supports that if we extend it a little bit, he doesn't say the hog farm, he says the pig. So he is individualizing. He is pointing out to the one, and he's talking about a woman who looks beautiful on the outside, but internally she doesn't have an ethical judgment or she doesn't have an intellectual discretion. And that's what he's drawing at. And that's the principle we get from it. But right now, if we were to say lipstick on a pig, if we say a ring in a pig's snout or something, we get that imagery helps us understand that the external appearance is not as important as the internal character. Okay? And remember, we live in a fallen world with fools, and they're going to flip this. And they're going to say the external view is much more important than the internal. And that's the battle we have. Okay? Oh, I went too far. I got to get you to imagine it before we actually do it, okay? So, if you think of a stag as a male deer, a stag. Think of a stag prancing in the wilderness or prancing in the forest. You get this happy imagery. But if I give you the image of a stag prancing and heading right toward a snare, you recognize the stag itself has no idea what it's heading into. How many ox, when they're headed to slaughter, know that that's where they're going? They line up, and they may be going to the same place they've eaten food for days, and there's just a little turn from that to another location, and it becomes that. So that imagery is what he wants. He's got a dancing stag, a prancing stag that's heading for a trap, and he has the oxen who is joyfully heading in to the slaughter. Because they both do not know what the outcome is. That's the image he's got for us. And what he says is, and this is in the context of a young man who is falling prey to an adulterous woman. Okay? He says, suddenly he was going after her like an ox that goes to the slaughter, like a stag prancing into a trapper's snare. Okay? And the context, if you read before, he's encouraging the young men to not fall into an adulterous trap where she is trying to call him to her bedchamber. She is doing it in a way that's very attractive. She's making it look good. And he looks at a young man who does not make the mental connection that where I'm going is going to be my death. And he connects it to an ox who's heading to the slaughter, has no idea, or a dancing stag. Who's heading for a trap, a snare. Okay? So he gives us that imagery. How many of you in your house have ever had a faucet that will not stop dripping? Is it not annoying? Do you not do everything you can? Do you not take that faucet and turn it as hard as you possibly can to get it to stop? How many of you in here at times have gone under the sink to the cutoff valve and turned it off because you're tired of hearing that dripping? Okay? Now, this application applies to nobody in here. I'm just going to tell you that. It applies to none of you. It's a principle out there, so we're going to look at it. Because he says this, a foolish son is destruction to his father, and the contentions of a wife are a constant dripping. None of you wives are that way, but it is in the Bible, so we're going to take a moment to look at it, okay? He pictures this relationship with a husband and a wife, and the wife is apparently contentious, and the idea of that is just continues to create a situation of a constant attack, negative comment, just wanting her way, and just constantly driving and saying it to the husband, and never quits. And he nagging. That's a term we might use, nagging. Contentious. Now, I would tell you that I would expand this to that any contentious person would be that way. If our son or daughter is that way, husbands, if we're that way, friends, if we're that way, we just continually drip our discontent. It's going to feel like that faucet you just want to turn off. Okay? And oftentimes we as people, we can't find the shutoff valve of the other person. We don't know where it is. If we could find it, we'd turn it, but we don't know where that shutoff valve is. Okay? So it gives us that.
Probably the next verse is a good one for the wives in here. 19:14 says, but a prudent wife is from the Lord.
And if I wish he had given me an image, because that would have applied to all of you in here. So, but yes, you're absolutely true. He contrasts that too. In the we can take some principles in relations within our home in that regard as well.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah. Bailed me out. God, thanks. Appreciate it.
Solomon had lots of wives. So.
Yes.
That's right.
And maybe one or two of them were a little contentious. I don't know.
One or two contentious, the
rest were all good. Very good. Now imagine going to a well. In their day, the well was generally in a location, and it was dug deep enough to get the fresh water, to draw that water, to nourish that. Can you imagine for yourself a good stream, a crystal clear stream that you're drawing water from, or a well that has this beautiful water in the bottom, okay? Imagine the day you walk up. This is your image that he gives us. You walk up to that well, and you look over, and it's polluted. Or you walk to the stream that you're going to get a nice cool drink from, and soldiers have passed through there and stirred it up, and it's all muddy, and it's just torn apart, and it's not clean anymore. That's the image that he uses to make a connection. He uses the term polluted well. He says, like a trampled spring or a polluted well is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked. Think about that. A righteous man who gives way before the wicked, and connect that to the well. The imagery here is the righteous man in his normal, correct way in which he displays and speaks truth within the culture he lives is the spring and the good well. The righteous man that gives way to the wicked is like a polluted well. Those who come don't find the refreshing component anymore. They don't find the nourishment. And this is a charge to us, I think, if we are going to be righteous. The idea is to not give up and just say, okay, wicked, have your way. That's the idea. You're just giving way to the wicked. So as righteous men, we are to continue to speak the truth, and women, we're to speak the truth, encourage the culture we live in to the right path, even though there's wicked, and to not give ground, personally, as we live, give ground to the wicked. So, if we take it literally, we would say, men, women, are you a polluted well? Or are you a refreshing stream? The way to be that is to not give way to the wicked. Okay? The image. All right?
You can get away from it.
Pardon me?
Let's say, I heard this one time ago, that he's abused. The wife has been abused. So the only way to get rid of, be out of that is get away.
Okay.
That's going to be
the I think that could be applied in the same thing, in the same way. How many of you have had a bad toothache? What is your day like when that tooth is hurting? Again, this imagery you all connect with because there were no smiles when you heard a bad toothache. It drew the emotions, the connections. Although we've generally been blessed to not fully remember the pain, we can't recall it to the surface. We can remember that it was uncomfortable. We can remember it was painful, and we want to stay away from it. Well, he uses a bad tooth, a toothache, to give us the idea of that. So have that image in your mind. What's my day like when I have a toothache? What does it feel like? And so forth. And he uses that imagery. He says, like a bad tooth and an unsteady foot is confidence in a faithless man in a time of trouble. Putting your confidence in a man of no faith in a time of trouble is like having a toothache. Okay? And by the way, this word unsteady, it often means out of joint. It would be as if your ankle, your foot, the joints are not in their proper place. They're out of place. And as we all know, sprained ankle, you'll walk on slightly. But if you dislocate that, you're not walking on it. It cannot bear your weight. So the tooth is supposed to provide a service to the body, be able to chew and do and those things. The foot is providing a service to the body. It's giving it stability and balance. The tooth helps provide nourishment. And he's giving us this imagery to say, when you put faith in if you're in a troubled time and you put faith in a faithless man, you trust him, it's just like having a tooth that you can't eat because it's too painful. Or a disjointed foot, you can't stand on it because it's too painful. It doesn't bring steadiness. So he wants that image. So we are encouraged through the proverb that in times of trouble, where would you head? To faithful men, to righteous men, for counsel, for assistance, and for help. We're not to seek, he says, it's like a bad tooth when you choose the path to unfaithful men in the time of trouble. Okay? All right. Has anybody ever seen a hedge of thorns? A few of you? Hedge of thorns. A hedge row that's thorns. It's all thorns, you know, prickly. I remember in the Northwest, blackberry vines grow anywhere. Anywhere. And if you leave them for very long, they take over an area.
It's like a small tree
yes.
that's taken over this
yep.
guy's front yard.
It just keeps growing.
And the stump is like this yeah. around now. So it's horrible.
It's horrible. The berries are great, and we would risk life and limb to get those berries because we would take a 2x12 plank. When I was in junior high, we'd take a 2x12 plank and a bucket because Mom always said, if you get the blackberries, I'll make the cobbler. Okay? She wasn't about to go get them, but if we got them, she'd make the cobbler. And we would take that 2x12 plank and go down and set it in the ground and drop it into the blackberry bushes. And then you'd try to make sure it was stable. And then we, vicariously, would get up in the blackberry bushes and pick blackberries.
Oh, wow.
A friend of mine fell once. That was disastrous, okay? So the concept he wants us to have is this sense of a hedgerow of thorns. Nobody tries to go through thorns. They will always try to find another route. Or to navigate through thorns, you've got to bend low, you've got to find your way, and you're going to get pricked here, and you're going to get poked there, and it's not an easy course. He uses this in Proverbs 15:19. He says, the way of the sluggard is a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. The way of the sluggard, the journey of a sluggard is like trying to navigate your way through a hedgerow of thorns. The path of what he wants, he's going at it in a way of ducking, changing his course, and moving around. And yet, it's using the term that the path of the upright, those that live correctly, the direction they go, it is like a highway. And this is in the Hebrew term that he's using back here. It's like a well-constructed road. Okay? So he gives us that contrast. So these are just some of the images that you get in the scripture, in Proverbs. And what I want to draw your attention to now is, what did it do? There it is. What is the application for us? Remember, Solomon is using this to draw those principles to the forefront of our mind and to connect our world with the principle so that we will remember it. Here's my encouragement to you. Continue to be a student of life. Do not just be an observer of what goes on, but allow your observations to draw you to godly principles. How do I see God's truth in what I observe around me? because Solomon tells us wisdom is screaming from that environment. And we can grow and understand if we will be a student of the world we live in, knowing that God created it, its order, its beauty, all of that gives us insight into his character and his nature. And so we ought to be a student of the world that we live. And then I would challenge all of you, share your stories, your images with your children and grandchildren that point them to understanding wisdom, understanding and wisdom. It is a known educational fact that children will understand truth through stories better than just facts. And students will often retain something far longer when they have an image that they connect that principle to. It's a truth. So I'm encouraging all of us to not go, we've reached, we've arrived, but to pass on that wisdom to your children and grandchildren by telling them the stories and also by having them connect and recognize how they can learn about God. I'm going to, Bev this morning talked about her Nana, sorry,
grandmother.
But when she was, when visited, she would, was it, why don't you share just what you shared in the car this morning?
Just what I shared in the car?
Yeah.
Well, she would take us for a walk. We would, she had a very small house when they retired, and we would get contentious. And so she would take us for a walk. Even as a kid, she would point out things on the walk. Oh, this is this tree. It does this. This is this. It does this. And she would teach us as she went. And, you know, I don't know that she did that intentionally. Maybe she did. She didn't say, oh, now we're having a lesson. But it really impressed me, you know, thinking, well, how does she know so much stuff? You know, you're a kid. How does she remember all of that? But it was really a big impression to be super intentional with my children and hopefully with my grandchildren to instruct them as we go on things and to keep that in the forefront of my mind that I'm instructing them in how to live. Yeah.
I was going to say, all those images are good, but teach discernment with it as you go, because we live in a world through the internet with images cast every day, and the images that are cast in a negative tone, and you will basically take stereotypes and start making decisions you shouldn't be that are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, discernment is always a part of that, very much so. I may have told you that George, it's either George Lucas or Steven Spielberg, I keep mixing those two guys up, but when he was interviewed about Star Wars, is that Lucas?
Lucas.
When he was interviewed about Star Wars, he made the statement, I may have told you this before, when they said, why are you doing it this way? He said, I want to influence the thoughts of children, and the best way to do that is through a story. And so he had underlying principles that he was attempting to pass on through entertainment. And we find that children entertained often grasp that without knowing. So we need to be proactive. We need to insert that. Saw a thing the other day, which I would have put up here had I had time, and it basically said, children grow much better and healthier when they're connected to their grandparent. And I thought, yes. You know?
I agree.
Yes. So don't give way to the wicked. Continue to teach your children, grandchildren, through stories, through imagery, connected to the truth. And it's a great way of communication, as we see from Solomon, to connect us to the principle.